From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
Here we are on a Thursday night where, well, let's face it, who knows what to say, what to do. I tried to think of a funny intro, and everything that I thought of just... It was just, nowhere was it as bizarre, as way out, as unimaginable as Donald Trump being president of the USA and us recovering from the PAX weekend. It has been an awesome weekend, and I'm joined tonight by Leon.
Hello.
And Josh.
Hello.
Josh's first time on air, but he's not nervous. It's episode 141 on the 10th of November. And Leon, what have we got coming up tonight?
Well, unsurprisingly, we're talking about PAX, and pretty much nothing else but PAX, because that's what we did. We all spent 3 days just gaming nonstop and walking around the convention center with 10,000 other people, or however many it was, like 50,000 in the end. It was crazy. So, yeah, lots and lots of stuff for that to talk about. I won't give you all the categories yet, because you're going to find out soon anyway.
It's going to be an interesting show, but I think it won't be pretty. That was the Cranberries with Pretty. It's pretty obvious that we know what we're doing here in the studio of Edge Radio 99.3 FM. With the Dice Men Cometh, Mark, Leon, we're joined by our good friend Josh tonight. Garth is away travelling around Vietnam. Trent is tied up with work. Josh is filling the third seat tonight, and he's doing a fantastic job. Now, enough of that, Leon. What did we get up to at PAX, and what did we play?
Well, okay, so we went to PAX, which, if everybody should know by now, is the Penny Arcade Expo. Penny Arcade, a very famous website where they do funds of the cartoons and whatnot, and obviously since then they've moved on to much bigger things, like getting 50,000 Australian nerds all in the same place at the same time. So we played lots and lots of games over those 3 days. I actually wrote them all down. I played 12 games over the 3 days, all of which were good. All of which ranged from I'd happily play again to I would happily own and probably will own sooner or later.
Yeah, it was a great weekend of gaming, that's for sure.
Yes, there was not a bad thing and there was not a bad experience, so we had a great old time. So it made sense to start off with something to do with the Penny Arcade guys themselves.
Absolutely. And so Penny Arcade, obviously, for those who don't know, if you've been in a coma for the last 5 years or something or more, two guys, Mike Krahulik and Jerry Holkins, they're the guys. They do the Penny Arcade web comic. And what do you reckon, 5 or 6 years ago, maybe they started a Penny Arcade Expo in Seattle, which is where they're from.
Yep.
Then it went to PAX East, which I think is in New York.
Yep.
Then they've also got... There's a PAX South, I think.
They've got a PAX Developer.
Oh, Josh, what happened to you? Go now.
Sorry, they've got a PAX Developer somewhere amongst the East and the West, and then they've got the Australian one as well.
Yeah, that's right. And so it's huge. Now, it's... You'd say... I used to say 95% video games and 5% other stuff. I think it's fair to say, particularly at the Australian PAX, it's now probably 80% video games, 10% table, 20% tabletop maybe?
I'd say maybe even more than that. Yeah. We had a big old area, and if anyone's ever ummed and ahed about going to one of these places, there was no less than, what to be realistic, 400 people playing tabletop games.
Oh, at least, yeah.
Every second of every single day we were there. And then including all the tournaments that were on, as well as the big open library that was pretty much any game under the sun you could get your hands on.
Yep.
And people there teaching prototypes as well. It was just glorious. But the game we're going to be talking about right now is a game called Thornwatch.
Mm.
Now, it is a graphic novel adventure that bridges the gap between board games and RPGs. Interesting.
So they say.
Yes. It is the first of three interlocking games in the Ironwood adventure line, which these guys have got planned for years and years to come.
Yeah.
So get in while you can. It plays between 2 to 5 players that are player characters, and then one person plays as the judge. So the judge is basically your overlord, your DM, your GM, whatever you want to call them. And we had, what was the lady's name? Can you remember her name?
Was it Julia?
Let's go with Julia.
Yeah.
Julia, who was
Julia.
Who was a lovely lady who was actually from Seattle herself, who actually knew the Penny Arcade guys and had just moved to Australia and I believe was getting married in a game store down here any day now. So congratulations to her, and she was very, very nice. So the game was created by Loan Shark Games. And now listen to the people that have had their hand in designing it. They're all absolute nobodies, but I thought we'll just, you know, we'll humour everybody. One of them is the designer of the Pathfinder adventure card game.
Oh, yeah.
Chad Brown. I believe you've played that, Mark.
Yes.
The other one was the co-designer of Lords of Waterdeep, Rodney Thompson.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
The third designer was founder of Loan Shark Games, lead designer on the new edition of Betrayal on House on the Hill that everybody knows, as well as the lead designer of the third edition of Dungeons & Dragons, Mike Salinka. And the other two people are Mike and Jerry themselves from Penny Arcade.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Mike Salinka also did, he had a lot to do with the Pathfinder as well.
Yep.
I think he's also been involved with, was it Dice Masters?
Tabletop Deathmatch, I believe, is what you're thinking. Oh, sorry. No, I'm talking about something else.
No.
But yes, he was one of the main judges on Tabletop Deathmatch, which is something really cool as
but
well.
Yeah, look, I mean, he's been around. He's been a big name in the gaming industry for quite a while, Mike Salinka.
Yeah.
And our host, Julia, even said she knew him.
Yeah.
So that was great.
So they were, those five guys are involved in designing this game, which is just nuts already before we even get to the start. So it was on Kickstarter a little while ago. It raised over $600,000.
Yeah.
They're only after $78,000. Over 5,000 backers. The game is due, sadly, a bit longer, not till September of next year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to take a bit of time. But, yeah, no, we got to play it, and it was very, very interesting.
And, look, I have to say, I was so close to backing this because, you know, I am a big Penny Arcade fan, and the Eyewood or Airwood comics have been really interesting. They just pop one out every now and again. It's sort of this, like, Boy Scouts in a medieval universe in this forest of lots of trouble, and the Thorn Watch are these spirits that come out and protect these Boy Scouts. And the art, obviously, of the Penny Arcade comic, it's very easy to tell. The art in this game is really, really lovely.
Yeah.
So the fact of that it had that, and the fact that it was sort of billed as a board game crossed with role-playing sort of almost had me pull the pin. I just wasn't quite sure about it.
Mm. Well, either way, so the game itself. So each player takes on the role of a different character. There is the Blade, who is fast and true of aim. He's basically your big stabby guy from the name The Blade. You'd never have guessed it. There's the Greenheart, who is the master of healing. There's the Guard, the protector of all. The Sage, who is to do with forest magic and the whatnot. And then the Warden, who is Marshal of Combat Lore. So he's your buff guy. Lots of different buff guys there, if you just realised all those five people I talked about. So the game begins with the judge picking a storyboard. And then the whole thing manifests from there. And then once you go through that challenge, and once you beat it, you then get options to go on to other things. So we just thought it was scenario-based. Turns out there is going to be an overarching, not necessarily campaign, but there is different things to go from different scenarios, which makes it kind of like Descent, which is brilliant because Descent is amazing. So when I first played it, I thought, yeah, this is good, but if there's not an overarching, you know, big deal to this, I can't say keep on playing it, but there's going to be, which is awesome. So the game takes place on one of many maps that display forests and swamps and villages and all different things, but the pawns are actually flat. They're not big miniatures that stand up. They're really nice arts, like they'll be like standees, but they lay flat on the field. And the reason they do this is to make the giant board look like a giant comic book panel. Which I don't know about you guys, I didn't even realize that when we were playing it until I read it and went, you're right, that's exactly what it is. The way that the boards are laid out, the squares and the rectangles and the triangle bits, they are exactly like panels of a comic book.
Right.
Yeah, so every different scenario is going to be like that, which is just brilliant. So the core engine of the game is the momentum system. What that is, it is a system that tracks how each player takes their turn. So there's a track that has all the player characters as well as the enemy characters. And it tells you who's going to be taking their turns, as well as the way to defeat enemies is to actually attack them and knock them as far as you can to the end of this momentum track So they're the last people to activate, and then if you hit them when they're on the end, that's when they start taking damage and starting to die. And there are other NPC characters in there as well that can move around the different track.
And that was a really novel mechanic, because you sort of think, oh yeah, there's eight somethings out there, you know, zombies or whatever, but they only have one hit point. So yeah, no way, just smack, 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 we're going to kill them all. But the whole thing of having to drive them down the initiative track and get them to the end before you actually did damage made it a challenge. And the fact that initiative track was randomly generated each round. So one time, you know, they came out and they were really close to the end, so it was a great advantage for us. But then the next time, they were really close to the front, and that made it really difficult. We had to do 5 or 6 or 7 points of damage before we could even kill one of them.
Yeah.
That was quite a novel mechanic, I think.
And I noticed that a few of the judges' powers actually played into manipulating this track.
Mm.
So they would spend a couple of coins or use an ability and move themselves down or up the track, depending. And that was really novel to see as well.
And, yeah. As I say, Josh, do you remember... So we played a certain scenario. I can't remember what the name of it was, but it had a...
There was a lion pup, and there was a felled daughter, her name was.
Yeah.
And it was something, and it was specifically designed, I believe, for PAX Australia.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's going to be in the game itself, or it's going to be like an expansion later. But yeah, the basic premise was that there was this young girl who'd fallen in the forest, and this lion pup was trying to protect her, and we were trying to fight off these evil, like, zombie skeleton things that were... The Driven, they were called.
Yes.
That were coming after her, as well as coming after the lion pup as well. Was that the same scenario you played, Josh?
Exactly the same
one
that we played.
There you go.
Yeah, that was the one they were teaching to lots of different people that weekend. Yeah, so the way the game actually plays is that each person has a deck of cards, which gives them skills and actions, as well as they have a playmate. I believe that's all the rest of us. They have a playmate in front of them, and what you do is you actually play cards from your hands onto your playmat, and you will prime different abilities, some of which you can't play straight away because you might not have the cards in your hand, but you can prime them for later. And one of the big keys of this game is cooperation. As I mentioned before with the classes, you've got healers, but then you've got protectors, and you've got buffers, and all those kind of things. Normally you don't get all those characters together until you've got a party of like 12 or so, because then you have heaps of warriors, heaps of thieves, heaps of mages. Nearly everyone in this, except for say the blade, is a class that helps each other, because in this game it is very, very, very important to think of what you're doing on your turn, but also what you can do to help everybody else around you.
Yeah, and the other thing, I guess, apart about that was you had actions you could do. So everyone sort of had one standard action, which was their sort of generic one for their type. So the blade could stab, the guard could sort of stab, the healer could heal and stab. But most of the other actions, you had a deck of cards, and you had to sort of ready those actions by using other cards to pump them up in a sort of a magic mana type way,
yep,
where you had to ready them first before you could use them. And so often it took you one or two turns to get enough of those the mana cards, which you could actually use other spell cards but sort of upside down, to get those abilities ready to use. So it was a lot of timing there of, look, mine's almost ready. Josh, you do yours now. Okay, I'll be ready next turn to do this. It was really teamwork.
And that playing along with the initiative track and the way that worked was really clever, the way that all the components came together.
Mm.
And the really awesome thing about this with the whole RPG aspect was that you had these two trait cards,
yes,
that you were given.
Yeah.
And with these trait cards, obviously, you might have something like you are intimidating or cocky or something along those lines, and it would be up to the judge as to whether or not you displayed those attributes while you were playing,
yeah,
which I think was a really great way to introduce people to that sort of...
Yeah, mechanic. That's how the role-playing aspect came in, as well as the fact that all these characters work really well together and it's really pure co-op. That is just like an RPG, because in an RPG, when you're playing with friends, you can't just go all rogue and just go, I'm going to take this on myself. That's not how RPGs work.
Well, you can, but you don't usually get invited back.
No, you don't. So yeah, so having those different traits, as you said, like one, I had to be excitable. So I had to actually physically, in the real world, as I was playing, be excitable. And like my wife, for instance, she was the green skin, the healer, but she had a trait of bloodlust. So she was a healer, but she was going like, oh, I can't wait to heal them because I get to soak up the blood and I get to wipe it on the face of my enemies as I kill them. And it was just, and everyone was just being weird, essentially, which made the game really, really interesting. And yeah, it adds to that RPG thing. And the fact that the person judging you on whether you've shown these attributes, and if you have shown them, you can then get a special hero die that you can add to your dice pool for later things. But the person judging you is the person you're playing against. So they have to basically be a proper, like, RPG dungeon master in the sense that, yeah, they're trying to beat you, but they've also got to be fair and kind of make the experience fun for everybody else as well.
Yeah, I thought that was maybe a potential flaw in the game.
It's hard.
You've got the judge who is trying to win, but there is that element where they are trying to act like a game master and bring the role-playing element in. Now, obviously, in the right person's hand, that's going to work really well. And, Julia and the other people I saw doing it, they were doing it really well. But if you've got someone who takes the sort of the descent view of, descent one versus many, I'm here to smash you guys as quick and as easily as I can, then, it's probably going to be hard to get that hero dice.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Like, some people could, based off that, some people could play this and maybe not enjoy it that much if... depending on the situation, because it's a hard moral line to go. Because if you're in the depths of the game, it's coming down to the nitty-gritty, and you're, say, being excitable, really, really excitable, and you're sitting there as the DM going, yeah, they're being really excitable, so I should give it to them, but if I give them the hero dice, they're probably going to beat me.
Yeah,
But I think it is more about, it's more about the fun that everybody has, same as an RPG Dungeon Master as well.
Yeah. Josh, any more impressions you want to give us on your game of Thornwatch?
Yeah, look, honestly, the group of people that I played with, I didn't know three of them, and I knew one other person there. And look, we had a blast together. It was so fun, and we were able to be silly. And there was the elements of the legendary sort of deck building in it, where you've got the wound cards coming into your hand. Or, sorry, not so much to your hand, but to your deck to prevent you from getting other abilities. And so I saw a lot of similarities between a couple of different games, but it all did really work well for me, except, as you said, Leon, the whole hero dice mechanic can potentially become tricky. Not in our game, but I could see how it could be.
You can't really take it too seriously when it comes down to that, because everyone is kind of acting a fool, so it is more of the fun. But a few other things about this game that make it interesting is that when you actually win the game, you get these physical, actual, in the real world, knots. Because Thornwatch has a lot to do with shrubbery and all these different kind of vines and stuff. So when we were playing, Julia was sitting there actually tying these little knots out of rope, and we're just like, what on earth is she doing?
Yeah.
That's because when we won, which we did, just by the skin of our teeth, she gave us this actual physical knot that we wrapped around our little PAX lanyards. But in the game itself, when it comes out, there are going to be these knots in the game that you can give to people. So next time you play a session, if you've got a certain kind of knot, it gives you a buff in the game.
Wow.
Yeah, which is really, really cool.
I didn't realize that was going to be in the actual game.
Well, we just thought she was being nice and being like, you've won, here's a cool memento to do with the theme of the game. But apparently that is a thing. Another thing that's good about this game is that each character, those five different classes, there is a male and female version of both characters.
Yeah.
Which I think is nice, because you end up, you're RPGing it, so if you want to be one or the other, it's just a nice touch.
Yeah, so Thornwatch, we had a lot of fun, really brought the Penny Arcade into PAX. We've got so much more to tell you about PAX. I'm going to come back and tell you a lot more after this.
That was a local Tassie act. Which one's the band name?
The Scientists of Modern Music.
The Scientists of Modern Music. And that was their song Sky Cats on 99.3 FM.
Come on, Leon.
Radio.
There's no Tassie band called Sky Cats.
With the Dice Men Cometh. Well, there should be. As of tonight, we're starting the Sky Cats. So, as we're still talking about PAX and everything about it, one of the best things about a big video game, board game, nerdy convention is all the cool panels. There was lots and lots of different ones, different keynote speaks from lots of different people, and we only got to go to one of them because we were very busy. But what one did we go to, Mark?
Leon, we went to the best one, of course. It was the Great Tabletop Debate! And it had some very interesting speakers.
Interesting, were they?
They were interesting.
We're breaking the bag again tonight.
So it was moderated by David Scott, who works for Rule and Make Games. We had, on the affirmative side, that there was a board game bubble. We had Dan May from Game Salute. He was the co-designer of those Polyhero dice. Remember those?
Yes, I do.
The dice that, the D6 was like a fireball and the D8 was like a scroll and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
We had Melissa Rogerson. Of course, he's a member of Board Games Australia board. But more importantly, she was the PAX tabletop manager and the one that helped us get some tickets.
Indeed.
She's fantastic.
God bless her.
There was a third guy on that team. And then on the against team, we had David Harding. From from Grail Games. We had Phoebe Wild, who's a game reviewer. She does written reviews and video reviews on a website called Cardboard Vault and also a big contributor to Board Game Geek. And we had James McKay, who owns the Game Laboratory, a game store in Melbourne.
Yes.
It was a very interesting debate, although for me, there was one guy who sort of didn't really lift his weight. I didn't mention him because...
It was a good amount of weight to lift, though, to be honest. He put a good effort into it, though.
Yeah, for an old guy, he does okay, that yes. guy. He's, of course, one of the founders of the Dice Men Cometh, one of the four presenters, and he's here in the studio with us tonight.
Yes.
It's me, of course.
Yes, indeed it was. And you did a pearler of a job. Look, don't pat yourself on the back.
Look, it was fun because, of course, it was in the style of the sort of comedy debates, and we had lots of funny visuals, slides up on the board. You know, I was able to get stuck into quite a few Kickstarter games that should never have been produced. Look, what I'm going to do, I do have the audio from it. Mm. I've got to get hold of the slides, and then I'll put them both up on our website,
yes.
thedicemencometh.com, and you'll be able to check out for yourself that panel. The audio came out quite well, actually, seeing as it was only recorded on a phone. Mm. So I'll post that, but that panel was fun. Josh, did you go to any other panels?
I did. I did actually go to the ethics of game design. That was a really interesting panel, talking about ethical choices in games and if they affect us in the real world. Is it a proxy for real world behavior? Can you use it to perform experiments? Really fascinating, eye opening.
Okay.
Yeah.
And any? Did you go to any of the video game ones?
You know what? No, I didn't. Yeah. I had too many games to play.
Because, I mean, I'm a bit of an old school video gamer. You guys are definitely new school video gamers. I was sort of reading through the program after PAX and went, oh, there's some really interesting panels, but you just don't have time for everything.
No, we were busy playing lots and lots of stuff. But to go back to the debate that you were on, Mark, mm-hmm. I think the best thing about that was the fact that how many people went to that... went to that talk, which was, the room was completely full.
Yeah, I think it would have been about 10 spare chairs.
It would have been nearly, what, 400, 500
yeah,
people?
Yeah, my guess was probably around the 400 mark.
Which I thought was hilarious because you guys were trying to convince people that the board game bubble had burst and that it's a failing hobby, and we had 500 people in a room all laughing and carrying on and spent an entire weekend playing games. So that was working against you a bit, but just to have that atmosphere that day, it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, look, it was really great. I had a lot of fun. I really appreciate the guys at Rule and Make sort of giving me a shot being in there, because it was, some big names in that group. And I was saying earlier, I even bumped into a guy at work today that I didn't even know he was at PAX, and he said, oh, yeah, and I watched your panel. So, look, hopefully we can get on more panels next time, and maybe we can even get along and see some other panels.
Yes, if you did go to it this year, or even if you didn't, next year there is talk of another one. I won't spoil what it is. We've been given a quick hint on what the theme might be for next year. But, yeah, it's going to be great fun again.
And, look, one of the things... So, apart from the panels, obviously, one of the things that, for me, was a highlight of PAX was getting to meet all the gaming industry icons that we know and love. Now, a lot of them we had interviewed in the past, but we'd only ever touch base with them. So when I do an interview, generally I do a quick video, Skype video hello, and then I go on to audio for the interview so we get better use of the bandwidth. So a lot of these people, I'd seen their faces very, very briefly, obviously seen them famously on the internet, but we got to meet a lot of these people and they were fantastic. They really accepted us as, you know, a little part of the industry, and I just want to say thank you to quite a few of them. So firstly, one of the big organisers around the Tabletop Gaming Development Association, two guys, Alex Winter and Wesley Lamont, and they also organised the DevCon, which was the Thursday night before PAX. It was basically a little mini convention for board game designers.
Yes, which we were lovely enough to get an invitation to as well, which we got to go there and hear some very interesting talks from some of the Australian bigwigs, and it was good fun to get everyone together before the 3 days of mayhem, because we might not be able to see everybody, because there was, you know, a few more extra thousand people those next few days.
Yeah, now, look, a huge shout out to these guys who made us really welcome. That's the Rule and Make team. Of course, Alan Chang and Alistair Keeney, they're the big guys at Rule and Make, but also Jason Kotzer, David Scott, Brendan Evans, who is the Skywood designer, and I think we're going to probably talk about that game in a future episode.
Yeah. Now, I spent a lot of my time when I wasn't playing games talking to a lot of those guys at Rule & Make, not only because they're really nice guys, they also happen to be Australian, they also happen to make really, really awesome games, and just side note, they may have been next to the Final Fantasy the Final Fantasy trading card game booth, which took most of my money that weekend, which yes. I'm sure we will all be hearing about for the next years as I waste my life on
it. Yeah, now can't forget also Rule & Make Dylan Shearer, who is part of Table Tyrant Games, and they are now a development studio working for Rule & Make. He is the lead guy behind the Smiths of Winterforge and Tavern Fame. We also met Cy Robertson and Barantis Eriks. He's got a new game coming with Rule & Make, Sugoi Bento, which is going to be coming to Kickstarter soon. Apparently, the guys from 93 Made Games, Sean, Anthony, and Al, hello to you. The Good Game Publishing guys, they had Unfair there, which obviously the Kickstarter's just wrapped up soon, designed by Joel Finch, and Kim and Ben were there.
Yep, we're going to be talking about Unfair either next week or sometime in the next few weeks. Like I said, we played a lot of games that we'll be talking about in our What We've Been Played section at the start of the show for months on end.
Yeah, I think we've got probably about 2 months' worth of stuff to
but
talk about.
Unfair is definitely one that we will be talking about because it, probably my game of the con, and I won it by a mile.
Okay. We caught up with Wade Dyer of the Fragged Empire role-playing game. G'day to you, Wade. And we met listener of the show and game design guru from Centennial Games, Alan Cheshire, with his game, Kingdom of Aya Kingmaker.
Yes, which we got a chance to play in the very dying seconds of the last day.
Yeah.
He got a hold of us and we ran over to his booth and played a quick game of it, and it was a pearler of a little game, and I'm looking forward to that, talking about that more.
Absolutely. And look, I kept talking about highlights. There were so many highlights. One of the highlights for me, meeting Ian O'Toole, the graphic designer and illustrator, working with Vital Lacerda. Of course, we've raved in the past about his work on The Gallerist, but now he had let's call it an advanced prototype. It was almost the finished thing, apparently, for Lisboa, which is the new Vital Lacerda game, talking about the drama in the city of Lisbon in the 1700s. I'm sure we're going to have almost a whole show talking about that game because it was amazing.
Yeah, when we get onto that game, it is going to be near a whole show because it was an amazing experience to be playing an advanced prototype and with one of the man himself that had designed that board in front of us, which is one of the best boards in board gaming history, which we had people coming up constantly talking about it. But to play it with him, and it's a very heavy Euro game, which as anybody that listens knows, that's not my thing, but I absolutely loved it.
Yeah, look, if you want to see what it looks like now, obviously there's some pictures on Board Game Geek, but jump onto Instagram. You'll see a photo of us there with the board. It is a beauty to behold. Ian's also done illustration on a game from Chaosium. Now, Chaosium, they're the Call of Cthulhu people, but they've actually done a board game set in the, I think it's the Glorantha universe.
Yeah, sure.
Which is another thing they do. A game called Khan of Khans. I think it's going to be kickstarted shortly. Ian's done the art and design for that. Garth and I had a great game of Glory to Rome with him. It's his favourite game. Another highlight of the con for me was beating Ian at his favourite game. Yeah!
Yes. That was impressive, I'm sure.
But we made up for going and buying him a few drinks afterwards. And look, so the industry people we met, they were so accepting, so friendly of us. It really was great to feel like part of the industry. I also want to give a special shout out to our excellent mate, Richard Canning, and his wife, Sarah. But Richard in particular, he taught us a number of games over the weekend. We're going to be talking about those. I don't know if we're going to fit in any later on tonight, but certainly over the next few weeks.
Yeah, not tonight, but yeah, in the next few weeks, the games he taught us that day we'll be talking about, because they're both games that I'm definitely going to own, I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, look, thank you so much, Richard. We really appreciated the time you gave us. So, PAX.
It was just amazing. The amount of people there playing games constantly, the amount of tournaments that were going on. There was just tournaments through the entire weekend, there was always tournaments of a King of Tokyo or a Splendor or a Ticket to Ride, and every single tournament had dozens of people in it, and it was just absolutely amazing.
All right, we're going to come back and talk about more PAX. We'll even give Josh a chance to speak again, because, you know, Josh, it is hard to get a word in edgewise when I'm around, isn't it?
That was Oingo Boingo with We Close Our Eyes on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. You know we're tired from PAX because we played that song 2 weeks ago. And we didn't realise at the time, we just chucked it straight on.
I did have another Oingo Boingo track, but I put the wrong one on. Sorry,
well,
guys.
We still got Oingo Boingo, so we're all good.
So now, talking about PAX, one of the people we got to hang out with was, of course, good friend of the show, Tanya, who is also the graphic designer, illustrator, and I think she's now the art director for Jelly Bean Games. And, of course, we had talked about Dracula's Feast being their Kickstarter. Now, I will let you know, we're here on a Thursday night. It's got 40 hours to go, so I'm not sure if this podcast will quite get out before the Kickstarter ends. But anyone who's listening live, and I know there's thousands of you out there, you've still got time to get on board that one. It's doing amazingly. It's up to almost $77,000. They were only after eight, almost 3,500 backers. And we got to play this game at PAX, which was great. We got to play it with Tanya and with Tom, who's one of the designers, after we'd had a beer with him the night before. So that was good. Now, it's obviously one of the genre of social deduction games. We played this with 10 people, I think, Leon, wasn't it?
I think you... I left my wife there and ran away.
That's
I
right,
ran away
yeah.
to the Final
yeah,
Fantasy
sorry,
booth again. But, yeah, no, I think it was about 10 guys you played with the first time, and then, yeah, for the first time it was about 10, I think.
Yeah, and look, one of the interesting things about this game is you don't have to lie. So unlike a lot of social deduction games where you're sort of bluffing and doing stuff like that, and I'll get you guys to tell us a bit more about what you've been up to with social deduction games. But this one, you have to tell the truth unless you've got a roll card where one of your particular special abilities is lying. And I really like that. So I had a lot of fun with this.
Yeah, that's the thing is that social deduction games, some people, as soon as they hear that, go, nope, because of either A, I'm a terrible liar, or B, I don't like lying.
Yeah.
So they just, all those games, they just cross off completely. Whereas this one, you can say, nope, sit down and play this with us. Trust us, you'll be fine.
Yeah, so look, we had a lot of fun with this. You've still got time to get on board if you're listening live. If you're listening to the podcast, it went amazingly, this Kickstarter. And keep an eye out for this one in retail. So that's Dracula's Feast. Now, we were saying, you guys, both of you, you'd got to play some other social deduction
games. We certainly did. We got to play the king, the granddaddy of all social deduction games,
right,
which was Ultimate Werewolf. Now, if anybody that doesn't know it, I would argue if we did a top 10 of most important games in our hobby, it would probably be in there.
It'd be right up there, that's for sure.
It'd definitely be in the conversation, that's for sure. It originally came out in 1987 called Mafia, but in recent adaptations, it's become Werewolf and Ultimate Werewolf now. So if anybody that doesn't know, it's a game that you can play between 5 and 75 people.
Oh, yeah.
And it is perfect for big conventions like this or big parties. So the kind of aim of the game is that there's two different phases. There's the night phase and the day phase. And some people are... Everyone's given a role and you all sit around in this group, normally about 20 or so people. There are werewolves and the werewolf's job is to kill everybody. That's how they win. And it's the villagers' job to try and survive, figure out who the werewolves are and kill them back. It's a game we've been talking about for a long time, never actually got to play because finding the dozens of people to do it is hard. But on PAX, Josh, you got to do it both nights. I got to do it the first night. What was just your impressions of first getting into it?
Wow. Well, look, it was exactly what I expected it to be, but just so much better as well.
Yeah,
I mean, I've been wanting to play this game since I was a teenager in high school.
Yep.
And as you say, getting, 20 people, 30 people together is, you know, it's no mean feat. So to have the opportunity to play with all these gamers just ready to go, it was sensational.
Everyone was in the right state of mind. Everyone knew what they were getting into. So, and there was a thing, this was late at night on PAX, so everyone had their fill of all the stuff during the day, and they're more than happy to sit down and get stuck into this. A lot of people didn't know each other, but it doesn't really matter for this game. It also had one of my highlights of the entire convention, which was before we even started, the little phone game that we played beforehand. Do you remember that?
I do remember
which was
that.
Myself was sitting next to my wife, Sarah, and across from us was yourself, Josh, and our other friend, John. And we were just sending back and forth, inappropriate pictures of werewolves that we'd found on the internet to each other and laughing it hysterically and crying our eyes out while waiting for the game to start.
That was our pre-game psychology.
Yes, okay. Which was just gold. So, yeah, so we played... We played three games on the second night. I know you played the first night as well. How many games did you get in the first night?
I think we only got through two because one of them went for, like, I want to say 2 hours. It was huge.
That is absolutely crazy. But so people can get knocked out in that game very early if you get killed out early, which kind of sucks. But you're in a place where there's a billion other board games, so you could go play something else or you could just stick around and watch, which when I get eliminated from my games, I always did because it's just interesting to see how the game unfolds and what everybody else was doing.
And that's exactly what everyone else was doing as well. I think there might have been one or two people who actually left the place.
Yep.
And everyone else was just standing in rapt silence.
Yeah, and the thing about this game is that there's lots of different variations. There's heaps of different character abilities. There's heaps of different variations to the rules on how you can play it. A lot of people customize it to their own way. All the DMs that actually you need somebody to run this game, and they all have a different style of doing it. So it's just an amazing experience to be a part of. And I think the game I enjoyed the most was the last game on the last night. So this was 11 o'clock at night on the Saturday night after we'd been there for 2 days of craziness. And the reason I enjoyed it so much is because I actually won it, which I was quite happy with. There was 20 or so people. I think this is the biggest group we'd played with. It was about 24 people, which was huge. And it came down to myself and two other guys. And I had to try... I was a villager, so I had to try and figure out who the werewolf was. And the guy to my right plays werewolf every month, has done for years,
yeah,
and knew exactly what he was doing. The guy across from me, who earlier was 5 meters across from me, across a big circle of people, he was now face to face with me because there was only three of us left in the village left alive. He had said nothing. He'd never played the game before. He had said nearly nothing. The way he had voted to kill people throughout the game or to protect people, he had not really given himself either which way. So I was just like, right, how on earth am I going to figure this out? But luckily, we kind of got it all together in the end, and it was an absolute ball.
And just like something like Resistance Avalon, if you've played that, the roles really added something different with, for example, you've got, your Merlin and things like that, where you need to be obvious enough to tell the people on your team what you're doing, but not so obvious that the bad guys figure out who you are and then they're going to mess up things
for
you.
It's a really difficult mind game because, if you give away too much information, you become a target. But if you've got information, you have to give it. If you know somebody is innocent and you see all the village going, that guy, we want to string that guy up, you've got to try and save them, but is it worth it in the long run?
So in the big groups that you guys had... I think probably the biggest group I've played werewolf in is maybe about like 14 or 15.
Yep.
And, you know, most of the people are boring old villagers. So did you have a lot of the special roles
we
out?
Had a lot, which I think is the way to play this game. We had a lot of them because we had about four or five. In the game, there was about 24. I think there was about five werewolves, and then the rest of us were villagers. So about nearly 20 villagers. I'd say majority of us had some special ability. They're only small, but they are enough to change your experience.
Right. I mean, for example, you had a couple of pretty much standard villagers, but they're masons, okay? So not a specific ability, but it just changes the dynamic. And I'll let people go out and find out what all the different things do.
Yeah.
But I mean, it felt like at least half of the villagers, if not more, had some form of ability.
Typical masons don't want to give their secrets away.
Well, that was a part of the actual game, is that if anybody said the word mason or secret society or Illuminati, you would actually thematically be dragged away in secret by that society and be out of the game. So essentially, if you cheated, you would be out of the game. Because once you know you're a mason and two other people are, all you then know is we're good guys.
No one ever knows who they are.
Can tell you. If you try to give it away, people go, oh, if he's giving that away, he knows that he's a mason as well. But there's, heaps of different abilities and heaps of way of doing it. We enjoyed it so much that we're actually going to consider running a werewolf night ourselves back here in little old Hobart sometime in January or so. So we'll have information on that a bit more once we know. But yeah, it's a game that I've wanted to play ever since I'd known about it. And the experience was as good, if not better, than it could have been.
Exactly.
And had you ever played werewolf before, Josh?
Never. I mean, I'm a huge social deduction fan.
Yeah.
Secret Hitler, Resistance Avalon. These are games I truly love. And so to play that at a mass scale is pretty much gaming mecca for me. That's amazing.
And so you mentioned Secret Hitler, and I know you've got a copy. Did you get to play that at PAX at all?
I did get to play, actually, and that's the wonderful thing about PAX. I mean, they made the floor space bigger this year for tabletop, but not for more booths, for more seats for people to play games.
Yes.
And that's just phenomenal. And we're walking along, me and John, and then suddenly there's somebody, oh, players wanted, you want to play Secret Hitler? Bang, we're straight in a game, yeah. 10 people. And I actually happened to be Hitler. Okay. Nice. I did a terrible, terrible job because I had half the people on the table fooled, everyone's questioning. But the moment that the bullet got unlocked by somebody just in the back of the corner, she had her eyes on me from get-go, that she knew I was a fascist, if not Hitler.
Yeah.
And so no discussion. There was no, oh, who should we kill? No, she's like, okay, that guy. I want to kill that guy. Boom. Game over.
Wow. Because we played it on the secret Thursday night where after we checked into our hotel, we went down to PAX to get our tickets before we went and had our teppanyaki feast.
Oh, which is amazing.
And then went to the DevCon, the developer's little con, which was up in the city. We were like, oh, let's go and check out the gaming area. Let's see what's around. And there was a guy there who had, I think he'd bought along
four copies.
Yeah, four or five like
print and plays.
Right. Of Secret Hitler, and he said, oh, I'll play this with you. And he threw it down on the table. We sat around. I had the misfortune of being Hitler.
Okay.
And I hadn't played it before. It was quick. It was dirty. I quite liked it. Although the whole, the policy thing. So we had, there's a mix of, I think it's what, like 12 fascist policies and six, what do you call them? Non-fascist policies?
Liberal policies. Liberal, that's policies, right. Yeah.
So the mix is heavily weighted towards the fascists. But we had four liberal policies come out in a row, and they only need
five
to win.
Right.
And I was Hitler, and the guy who was running the game was a fascist. We were the only two fascists. And I was sort of looking to him to give some guide as to what we should do, because I didn't really know. And so then I had to sort of out myself by giving someone...
It was me.
That's right. You gave me one of each.
I gave
you
one of each. So if you chose the good one, you're a good guy. The bad one, you're a bad one. That's you put out the bad one and then tried to blame me, saying, oh, Leon gave me two bad ones. He's the bad guy. To which I turned around and said, I've put those like four blue that are on the board. Yeah. I put like three of them out. So it was like, oh.
Didn't work out.
Yeah, so it didn't work out too well for you, Mark.
Look, I got quite stuck. But look, I had a lot of fun with it. I'd really like to play it again. See a few of the special roles.
And look, especially playing it like 8 to 10 people, that's fantastic because it actually changes the way the game works.
Yes.
Hitler doesn't know who the fascists are, and that changes the dynamic massively.
But the one thing that's about Secret Hitler, and even with Dracula's Feast as well, it used to be with social deduction games, we've had Resistance for kind of years, but now if you are guys like us that love these kind of games and love the backstabby nature of it, between Secret Hitler, Dracula's Feast, Resistance, Avalon,
Coup,
Deception, Murder in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
All those games, if you had eight mates that all loved these games, that's an amazing night. Get around a table with some booze, you spend a whole night playing those.
And then, then you can throw in things like Bang, which has like that Bang hidden the dice roll game, element.
Yes, yeah.
And of course, like Cash and Guns, which has that group dynamic, even though it's not social deduction. It's, it's just a brilliant social game.
Yeah. What we're actually going to do on this Werewolf night, we're going to hopefully run sometime in January, is we're going to have tables aside and we're going to have people there with Coup and Resistance and Cash and Guns that know the rules backwards and forwards. Though, so if people are in a big group and they get knocked out and four or five people don't want to stand around and watch the rest of the game, we're going to get them to jump over one of those tables and just get straight... And One Night Ultimate Werewolf as well, get to jump straight into them so no one has any downtime or any boredom. And we're really looking forward to it.
Absolutely. So, look, we've talked a lot about PAX tonight. We've got a lot more to talk about around more of the games that we've played. And, look, if you want to check out our Instagram, Diceman Cometh on Instagram, you see some great photos of our PAX time. Also, our Facebook page, which surprisingly is facebook.com/TheDiceManCometh. You can check out our Twitters. We tweeted a lot while we were at Facebook. And Twitter is a great way of talking to the designers and the other industry types. You could also check out our website, dicemencometh.com. You've got all these ways to see what we were up to. Gents, did any of you have any sort of final reflections on PAX?
Before we jump to Josh to see what he has to say about it, I just want to quickly read the list of what I played. Secret Hitler, Codenames Pictures, Thieves Market, which I'd never heard of, which was an absolute jewel, Unfair, Thornwatch, Hop, Tiny Epic Western, Istanbul, Ultimate Werewolf, Lisboa, Kingdoms of Aya, Kingmaker, and Skywood. As I said, we're going to be talking about all these mostly in the next couple of months, but I just wanted to let everybody know that every word I just said of those games, they're all worth buying. And I had a tremendous experience of having a whole weekend full of great games with great people.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say, no, I mean, as well as that, sorry, Josh, I played Glory to Rome, as I mentioned, and Terraforming Mars. I can't wait to talk about that one.
Yes, as Drill's Dracula Feast, which is, you know, we have a bit biased, but is awesome as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely, and you know what? Look, this year PAX was—it's the first in an annual tradition for me. I've decided immediately this is an event I need to get to.
Brilliant!
Oh yes, yeah. Me as well. This is my first PAX, and I'm never missing one. I can tell you that right now.
Absolutely, and look, the thing is nowhere else in Australia at any really time of the year can you walk into a place where there's thousands yeah. of people surrounding you. You can turn to any of them and start talking to them, and you know what? They speak your language. They're the most courteous bunch of people you've ever met. They all want you to play in their games, and I just felt a real kinship with the crowd. Yeah.
Look, this was my second PAX, so I went in 2014. Had a really great time, but I think tabletop was still sort of finding its feet in PAX at that stage, and it was probably about half the size that it was this time. And it was also tucked right at the back of the hall, whereas this time there was some extra stuff up the back of the hall, and the let's call it interesting, decision they made was to have the main merch booth behind tabletop. So people in the video game area, if they wanted to go to the big merch booth, had to walk through tabletop and get to it. So then a lot of people come and go, wow, there's all these people playing analog games, hard copy games, cardboard and dice and chits. And they sit down and they play. And because there's teachers there, It's a fantastic experience.
I actually taught five guys a game of Dead of Winter because I was at some of my time there. I spent teaching games as well, and they were just that, just five guys that were just kind of like walking around there. You go to PAX to see video games; that's what it's about normally. They saw Dead of Winter and went woo, as they should have. They sat down and be like, "What on earth's going on here?" And I said, "Lads, just give me 5 minutes; I'll teach you how to play it."
Yeah.
And they had an absolute ball.
Yeah, brilliant. So look, PAX has been fantastic. We had an absolute ball. We're going to come back next week and probably the week after and the week after and tell you more about it. But until then, keep playing games, keep being nice to each other. Don't get your hopes down too much about the US presidency. And thanks for being with us, Josh.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
We will come back again next week. Bye.
See ya.
See ya.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.